Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Mario Ritter reports on recent news related to the 2014 disappearance of more than 40 students in Mexico.
The parents of 43 Mexican students missing since 2014 said the government lied to them. The parents made their claim a day after a group of international experts issued a report criticizing the way the Mexican government handled the case. One parent said, "The government started lying to us from the start." The Mexican government said the students were training to be teachers at a small college when they were kidnapped. They said corrupt local police officers turned the students over to a drug gang. The government said the students were killed and their bodies were burned in a mass grave in the southern part of Mexico. Experts from the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights studied the case and said there are problems with the way the Mexican government presented the case's timeline. There are also problems with the way they studied the bones left at the mass grave. Experts also said the government provided information from suspects who were tortured by police and military personnel. The torture led to confessions that will not be allowed in court by Mexican judges. The report also said any information that did not support the government's original description of the case was not taken seriously. The Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto, wrote a message on Twitter saying the government will analyze the whole report. In spite of the new report, there is no new information about the students who have been missing since September 2014. When the report was presented at a news conference on Sunday, parents chanted, "They took them away alive. We want them back alive." I'm Mario Ritter.
Next, Jim Dressback tells us how the weather event El Niño may affect areas in East Africa.
The weather changer known as El Niño has left countries in East Africa in danger of famine, according to a group of non-governmental organizations. The Somalia NGO Consortium said Tuesday that El Niño is creating drought and food shortages. The group released the statement to coincide with a United Nations meeting on humanitarian needs related to the effects of El Niño. El Niño is the natural warming of parts of the Pacific Ocean that changes weather worldwide. El Niño occurs every several years and lasts close to a year, according to the Associated Press. El Niño impacts weather systems around the globe. For example, some places receive more rain, while others receive no rain or snow. Last year, El Niño mostly helped conditions in Kenya, Rwanda, Burundi, Uganda, and Tanzania by creating more rainfall. But this year, El Niño has severely reduced rainfall in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Djibouti. As a result, close to 19 million people in the Horn of Africa region face food shortages, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Cash vouchers, and food have already been issued to Somalians. But the Somalia NGO Consortium says more help is needed. The consortium is calling for urgent humanitarian action. Somalia suffered a deadly famine from 2010 to 2012. More than 250,000 people died because of drought and food shortages. NGOs are hoping to avoid a similar or even larger disaster this year. I'm Jim Dressbach.
China recently released an unusual comic strip. The comic, which tells a story in words and drawings, appears to be about a romantic relationship between a Western student and a Chinese woman. But the comic is really part of China's new anti-spying campaign. In the comic, a Western student named David meets a Chinese woman named Zhao Li. David brings Zhao Li flowers, he buys her dinner, and he takes her for walks in the park. Then he asks Zhao Li for secret documents. The comic, or cartoon, warns citizens against helping people who might be spies. China has also released a phone number citizens can call if they are suspicious about foreign spies and Chinese citizens who might be helping them. China's anti-spying effort comes at a time when two high-profile criminal cases are making headlines. Just last week, the Chinese government sentenced to death a computer technician for helping foreign spies. The computer technician's name is Huang Yu. He was accused of taking $700,000 over the course of almost 10 years to pass confidential information to a foreign country. His mother and brother-in-law were also punished for helping him. Wang appeared on national television with the message, "Turn yourself in if you are spying for a foreign country. It's better for your family and for you," he said. The Chinese government prosecuted another man for stealing state secrets. He was a Canadian who operated a cafe near China's border with North Korea. There are several points of view about the anti-spying campaign. One view, according to analysts in China, is that it makes sense to be worried about citizens passing secret information to foreigners. "Any responsible government should be concerned," says Shen Dingli, an international relations professor at Fudan University. But others say the anti-spying campaign makes the average Chinese person more afraid of foreigners. They warn it also makes citizens more accepting of government restrictions on press and social media. Eva Pills is a legal scholar from King's College in London. She says China's campaign against spying helps the government explain the need for the repression of civil society. I'm Dan Friedel.
Small companies that are trying to get started are known as startups. Some of the people establishing startups in the United States are immigrants from countries like Sri Lanka, Taiwan, and China. Christopher Jones Cruz reports on how some of these companies are doing in the business world.
The area in Northern California between San Francisco and San Jose is known as Silicon Valley. Some of the world's most famous technology companies have headquarters there. Apple and Facebook are two big ones. Besides established companies, there are many small companies trying to get started. These businesses are known as startups. Some of the people behind the startups are immigrants from countries like Sri Lanka, Taiwan, and China. One of those startups is called Cloud of Goods. It is an online business that links local residents who have things to rent with tourists who need those things. People who need car seats, strollers, bicycles, or camping equipment can use the service to rent these goods. Punsri Abewikrema is the founder of Cloud of Goods. He is from Sri Lanka. He says he has based his business on the fact that we all buy goods that we do not use all the time. When they are not being used, they can be rented to someone else.
The idea was, there's a lot of resources that we all accumulated in our homes, in our garages, in our closets that's sitting idle. And how can we use this to make it better for everyone?
The company just opened for business. Workers at the company recently celebrated its first $500 of income with a drink of sparkling wine. There are computer programmers working on Cloud of Goods' website in Sri Lanka. But in California, there are 10 unpaid employees trying to build the company. Stacy Tron is part of the startup. She says the company is trying to start small and then expand, similar to how Amazon did it with books, she says. Ji Chuang founded Listia with James Fong. They are Chinese Americans who met at Cornell University in the state of New York. Listia is an online marketplace where people can trade in used items for credit. Then, they can use the credit to buy other items, like collectible coins, video games, or cell phones. Listia has been in business since 2009 and has 9 million users. The founders overcame some problems 2 years ago. The U.S. Department of Labor investigated the business. The founders were required to pay wages to the website moderators, who should have been considered employees. Now, 18 people work at their office in Santa Clara, California. Chuang says it is very important to hire people that know more than you to start a successful business. Neil Gorenflow is a business analyst for a site called Shareable that tracks what is called the sharing economy. He says it is hard for businesses like Listia and Cloud of Goods to find out what it takes to be successful. But that is not because there are not enough smart and motivated people looking to work in new businesses. Abe Wickrema says Silicon Valley provides the perfect mix of people with skills and opportunities.
All that, you know, different expertise, different skill sets, different talents mix here together. And that is the right recipe for a, you know, successful company.
I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Some researchers have been studying the reasons why it is more difficult to sleep in a new place. Bruce Alpert shares their findings.
Have you ever had trouble sleeping in a new place? Lots of people do. And now researchers from Brown University in Rhode Island think they know why. They found that one half of the brain remains more awake than the other half when people are trying to sleep in a new place. This appears to be a case of the brain keeping people ready for trouble in a new place, the researchers said. The sleep findings were reported in Current Biology and by Brown University. In their report, the researchers said many people report they have a harder time sleeping the first night at a hotel or other places outside their home. They call it first night effect. In Japan, they say, if you change your pillow, you can't sleep, said Yuka Sasaki, one of the report's authors. You don't sleep very well in a new place. We all know about it. The researchers measured brain waves for 35 volunteers over two nights in a laboratory. The two nights were a week apart. They found during the first night, the left hemisphere of the brain was more active than the right hemisphere. This was during the first deep sleep period, the researchers said. Sasaki said a lot of questions remain. Researchers did not keep measuring brain waves all night long, so they don't know if the left hemisphere keeps watch all night, or whether it works in shifts with the right hemisphere later in the night. They also do not know why the extra brain activity, at least during the first phase of deep sleep, is always on the left hemisphere. For some, this research may be calming. It is good to know that our brain is looking out for us in a new place. But it may not help with sleep. That extra brain activity, at least according to this new research, makes it harder to get the sleep people need to wake up well rested in the morning. I'm Bruce Alpert.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Suzanne Meyer, the Assistant Director of the English Language Institute at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, says that many students need to develop critical thinking skills. In other words, students need to learn how to collect information and then evaluate the information and apply it to a new context. She says,
we need to get students actively engaged in inquiry from the beginning levels on into those levels where they really are close to professional and university context.
One way to develop critical thinking skills, Meyer says, is to teach students to be creative about the types of questions that they ask. Meyer says that there are many benefits to using question-asking activities with English learners. Question-asking activities help students to become better language learners. She says,
question-asking overall helps students be better language learners, and not for the obvious, because you ask a question, you get an answer, but often questions are the first point of contact. And so if my question is not good, then that's going to direct the level of our conversation.
Meyer also says that question asking may help develop critical thinking skills by allowing for more interactions.
People who can ask questions are very confident. And when you're confident, you can have more interaction. That extra interaction might lead to critical thinking because you're more likely to actually integrate in some fashion into a new setting if you're in an ESL scenario. So I think overall, just that whole question asking idea has so many benefits.
There are many strategies to improve question asking and develop critical thinking skills. One possible strategy, says Meyer, is to use question asking patterns that start with concrete questions and move to abstract questions. So, for example, if students were reading a new text, they would design a series of questions using three different steps. In the first step, students create questions about information in the text that they are reading. In the second step, students create questions about how the information in the text connects to their own life. In the third step, students create questions about abstract ideas, ideas that came up in the questions about themselves. If students follow these three steps, they have not only practiced creative ways to ask questions, they have also started practicing critical thinking. I'm John Russell.
This is What's Trending Today. Shinda is a 24-year-old gorilla that lives at the Prague Zoo in the Czech Republic. She is a bit overweight. The gorilla had never given birth. Several times she became pregnant, but the pregnancies ended early, without a baby. Zookeepers did not expect her to ever be able to give birth. In fact, nobody even noticed that she, once again, was pregnant. But on April 23rd, Shinda delivered a healthy baby gorilla. It shocked everyone at the zoo. The director of the Prague Zoo told the media, "I can't even imagine what could surprise me more. Not only did we not know about Shinda's pregnancy, but to begin with, over time we've lost hope she could have a baby anymore." People on social media reacted to the unexpected birth, too. The term Prague Zoo has been trending on Facebook and Twitter. Photos and video of the mother and baby gorilla have gone viral. One video of Shinda holding her new baby has more than 2 million views. One Facebook user wrote, "Just simply amazing how they are so much like humans. Look how she's holding and feeding this baby." But others reacted with concern that zookeepers did not even know Shinda was pregnant. One social media user asked how this could be called care if they didn't even know she was pregnant. Add the fact that she went on display within 24 hours. The zoo has already permitted visitors to see the mother and baby. The gorillas are among the most popular animals at the Prague Zoo. tens of thousands of people watched the birth of another gorilla online back in 2007. And that's what's trending today. The film 10 Years imagines life in Hong Kong under Chinese rule in the year 2025. It shows a protester self-immolating in front of Chinese government offices and Mandarin replacing the use of the local Cantonese language. China's central government blocks any mention of the film on the internet. But in Hong Kong, the film has been attracting big audiences. The film was released in December 2015. This month, the film's producers officially released the film online. The film's executive producer, Andrew Choi, said he hopes audiences take the film as a warning of Hong Kong's possible future. He also said he hopes the film inspires people to do something. The film gives the audience a chance to reflect that if we don't want to see a future like 10 years in 10 years' time, what can we do today to preserve some of the things that we used to enjoy in Hong Kong, he said. Earlier this month, 10 Years won the top prize at the Hong Kong Film Awards. Chinese television channels on the mainland usually broadcast the ceremony, but this year they did not broadcast the awards show. Some people criticized the award given to 10 Years. Hong Kong businessman Peter Lam said awards shows are becoming too political. He said the award given to 10 Years was unfortunate for the Hong Kong film industry, and that the decision was based mostly on the political message in the film. Lam is chairman of the Hong Kong Tourism Board and owner of the Hong Kong-based Media Asia Film. 10 Years has 5 short stories. Each story was filmed by a different director. Each one imagines what life in Hong Kong may be like under Beijing's central government in 2025. Hong Kong resident Alex Lau said the movie represents many people's fears that local Hong Kong culture is slowly disappearing, along with political freedoms. We don't want Hong Kong people to change and be like Chinese people, so we worry about this, Lau said. When the film was first released in Hong Kong, some theaters refused to show the film. But many people have watched the film during community screenings throughout the city. Pro-democracy activist Joseph Chung said the movie's popularity comes from the concerns of Hong Kong's citizens. The political appeal, the political messages, of course, are the ones that have been attracting the audience, and that is a bit surprising. And that also reflects the worry and the political concerns of Hong Kong people today, Chung said. 10 Years cost just $64,000 to make. It has earned nearly $800,000 in ticket sales since its release last December.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.